A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's pointing out that President Trump recently claimed Iran's highly enriched uranium is entombed after successive rounds of strikes. But Iran has shown again and again it'll claw back capability from damage. Every major intelligence agency is watching the known sites. So the question is, what reasons are there to be suspicious that entombment is a reliable safeguard, meaning extricating the material is unnecessary? And if Iran did try to recover it, what kind of depth and technical complexity are we talking about, and how likely is detection?
This is one of those claims where the political language and the engineering reality are just miles apart. Entombed sounds final. It conjures up a pharaoh's tomb, sealed forever. But in nuclear contexts, entombment is a specific thing, and it's almost never permanent.
It's the nuclear equivalent of putting a tarp over a problem and calling it a roof.
That's not far off. So let's start with what entombment actually means operationally. The IIII and the U.S. Department of Energy draw a distinction between what they call hardened facilities and entombed facilities. Hardening is about survivability. You reinforce against attack. Entombment is post-damage. You've got a wrecked enrichment hull or a collapsed centrifuge cascade, and you seal it under concrete, rubble, maybe backfill it with grout. The idea is you're making the material inaccessible. But here's the thing. The standard for calling something permanently entombed and, say, U.S. nuclear remediation is incredibly high. We're talking about engineered barriers with monitoring systems designed for centuries.
Iran's version of entombment after an airstrike is presumably...
it's ad hoc. You've got a bombed-out facility, maybe a collapsed roof, maybe some concrete poured over the wreckage. That's not an engineered entombment, that's debris, and debris can be cleared.
Let's talk about what Iran is actually working with here. The known sites, Natanz, Fordo, Isfahan, have been hit multiple times since 2024. What's the actual state of the material?
The IAEI reported in March of this year that Iran's stockpile of 60% enriched uranium was 102 kilograms. That's enough for multiple weapons if further enriched to 90%. And 60% is already what the IAEI calls high enriched uranium. It's not weapons grade, but the enrichment work to get from 60 to 90 is dramatically less than getting from natural uranium to 60. You're talking weeks, not months, if you have the cascades running. So the material itself is the prize. The question is whether it's physically recoverable.
The claim is that it's buried under enough rubble and concrete that getting it out is impractical or impossible. Which brings us to the first reason for skepticism. Iran has demonstrated repair speeds that make entombed look like a very temporary condition.
After the 2024 strikes on the Natanz, centrifuge assembly resumed within 6 weeks. That's not building a new facility from scratch. That's clearing debris, bypassing damaged sections, and getting cascades spinning again. The U.S. intelligence community estimated in 2025 that Iran could rebuild a damaged enrichment facility within 6 to 12 months. That's not a generation-long remediation project. That's a construction season.
The material doesn't go anywhere. It's still there. The uranium hexafluoride, the centrifuge components, the control systems, they're under rubble, not vanished.
And this is where the Chernobyl comparison is instructive, but also misleading. The Chernobyl sarcophagus was built in 1986 to entomb a melted-down reactor core. It took 30 years and roughly $2 billion to build the new safe confinement structure that now covers it, and even that still has leakage issues. But Chernobyl was a full core meltdown with dispersed fuel, graphite fires, the works. Iran's situation is different. You're dealing with enrichment halls, not a reactor core. The material is in a form that's meant to be processed. It's valuable. And Iran has every incentive to recover it.
The sarcophagus comparison works against the entombment claim in both directions. Either it's a real entombment like Chernobyl, which took billions and still isn't perfect, or it's ad hoc rubble sealing, which is a speed bump. Neither inspires confidence.
And let's talk about the physical barriers. If you've got a centrifuge hull that's been struck, what are you actually dealing with? You've got reinforced concrete that's been compromised, spalling, cracking, rebar exposed. You've got potential contamination from damaged centrifuges. Uranium hexafluoride is nasty stuff, corrosive, and when it hits moisture, it forms hydrofluoric acid and uranyl fluoride, so the recovery environment is hazardous. You need remote handling equipment. You need contamination control. You need to manage airborne particulates. This isn't guys with shovels.
Iran has been doing nuclear work under hazardous conditions for decades. They've operated centrifuges in underground bunkers. They've dealt with sabotage. They've had cyber attacks destroy equipment. Hazardous recovery is kind of their thing.
And they've got a deep bench of engineers who've been working on these problems since the 1990s. The technical complexity of recovery falls into a few buckets. First, debris removal. You need to clear collapsed structures without damaging the material you're trying to recover. That means careful, slow excavation, probably using remotely operated equipment. Second, you need to assess which centrifuge cascades are salvageable. Some will be destroyed, but others might just be contaminated or misaligned. Third, you need to reestablish the support systems, the vacuum pumps, the cooling, the power supply, the feed and withdrawal systems for the uranium hexafluoride. Those are complex, interconnected systems.
You're doing this underground in some cases.
That's the Fordow situation. Fordow is built into a mountain, and the enrichment halls are buried under something like 80 meters of rock. If you strike the entrances and collapse the access tunnels, you've genuinely complicated recovery. But here's the thing. Iran built Fordow specifically to survive airstrikes. They know the access routes, they know the geology, and they've got tunneling expertise. The idea that a collapsed entrance permanently seals a facility they built is optimistic at best.
It's like locking someone in a room they designed themselves. They know where the vents are.
They've got time. There's no clock on this. If it takes 2 years to tunnel a new access shaft and clear the debris, they'll take 2 years. The material isn't degrading in a way that makes it useless. We're talking about uranium, which has a half-life measured in billions of years. The entombment claim implicitly assumes a time pressure that doesn't exist.
The engineering case is already shaky. Let's talk about the geology, because that's the part most coverage misses entirely. Iran sits on some very active fault lines.
This is critical. In 2024, there was an earthquake near Natanz that caused minor damage to enrichment halls. Natanz is in the Zagros Fold and Thrust Belt. It's seismically active. If you've got a damaged facility with compromised structural integrity, and then you get a magnitude 5 or 6 earthquake, your entombment can become a collapse that spreads contamination, or, worse, exposes material. The concrete you pour to seal things becomes a hazard itself.
If you're entombing material below the water table, or if seismic activity changes the hydrology, you're looking at potential groundwater infiltration that can mobilize contaminants and corrode whatever containment you've got.
The Hanford site in Washington State is the cautionary tale here. The U.S. buried nuclear waste in tanks and trenches starting in the 1940s, thinking it was permanently contained. Decades later, they discovered plumes of contamination moving through the groundwater toward the Columbia River. Retrieving buried nuclear materials at Hanford has cost hundreds of billions of dollars, and it's still not done. And that's with U.S. resources, U.S. technology, and no hostile intent, just an environmental remediation. Iran's entombment is a combat-damaged facility sealed in haste. The idea that it's permanently contained is optimistic in the extreme.
Optimistic in the extreme is a polite way of saying it's a political claim, dressed up in language that sounds technical.
That's exactly what it is. Entombed is a word that closes the file. It lets policymakers say the problem is handled, the material is neutralized, we can move on. But in nuclear security, the file is never closed. The IIEI's entire existence is built on the premise that you have to keep verifying, keep inspecting, keep monitoring. The moment you declare something permanently neutralized without ongoing verification, you've created a blind spot.
Which brings us to the intelligence question. Every major agency, CII, Mossad, MI6, the usual suspects, is watching Iran's known nuclear sites. Satellites, signals intelligence, human sources. Can Iran recover material without being detected?
It depends heavily on the site and the method. Let's start with what satellites can see. If you're doing surface-level recovery, clearing debris, bringing in heavy equipment, rebuilding structures, that's visible. Commercial satellite imagery from companies like Maxar and Planet can spot construction activity within days. The imagery analysts are looking for changes in vehicle traffic, new excavation, dust plumes, thermal signatures from equipment. If Iran just rolls in bulldozers and starts digging, the world knows within 48 hours.
The surface-level recovery at somewhere like Natanz, which is above ground, would be hard to hide.
Hard, but not impossible. Iran has gotten very good at camouflage and deception. They've used tarps, they've built false structures, they've timed activity to coincide with cloud cover or satellite passes. But over months of recovery work, the pattern becomes visible. The real challenge is underground, for Dow and the tunnels. If the material is entombed underground and Iran is tunneling from an adjacent facility or a new access point, detection becomes dramatically harder. You're not seeing surface disturbance beyond a small entry point. The tunneling itself can be done with boring machines that produce minimal seismic signature. Iran has extensive tunneling experience. They've built missile facilities, command bunkers, and nuclear sites underground for decades. They know how to do this quietly.
The mountainous terrain around Fort Dow makes signals intelligence harder too. You've got rock-absorbing RF, you've got natural cover for moving equipment and personnel. It's not a flat desert where everything stands out.
The 2025 U.S. intelligence assessment specifically noted that underground recovery operations in mountainous terrain present significant detection challenges. SIGINT can pick up communications, but if the Iranians are using fiber optic lines and disciplined radio silence, you're relying on human intelligence. And human sources inside Iran's nuclear program are not exactly abundant. The Iranians have spent years rooting out informants.
We're in a situation where the political claim is it's entombed, don't worry about it. But the intelligence community knows it can't fully verify that, and Iran has every incentive to try recovery, and a track record of pulling it off.
That's before we even get to Iran's history of undeclared facilities. The site discovered near Isfahan in 2018 wasn't on anyone's list until it was. Iran has repeatedly demonstrated that the known sites are only part of the picture. So even if the entombment claim is accurate for the specific halls that were struck, what about the cascades that were moved before the strikes? What about the material that was dispersed to smaller, harder-to-track locations?
The entombment claim is about specific cascades in specific holes. It's not claiming that Iran's entire stockpile is under concrete. It's saying the material at the struck sites is inaccessible. But if Iran has been moving material around, which every intelligence agency assumes they do during periods of tension, then the entombed portion might not be the whole picture.
This is where the North Korea comparison becomes relevant. Yongbyon has been dismantled and disabled multiple times since the 1990s. Cooling towers have been blown up, reactor buildings have been sealed, there have been photo ops and diplomatic declarations, and every time, North Korea rebuilt. The capacity came back. The material never really went away. Iran has studied the North Korean playbook carefully.
Let's walk through what a recovery operation might actually look like, because I think that's where the prompt is really pointing. If Iran decides to recover entombed material, what's the step-by-step?
Phase 1 is assessment. They need to understand what's actually buried, which cascades, what condition, what the contamination levels are. They'd likely use borehole cameras, radiation detectors on probes, maybe ground-penetrating radar to map the rubble. This phase can be done with minimal surface signature, small drilling rigs, a few personnel, nothing that screams nuclear recovery.
They'd have done some of this assessment already. They know what was in those halls when they were struck. They know the layout.
Phase 2 is access. If the original entrances are collapsed, they might sink a new shaft or tunnel from an adjacent facility. This is heavy construction, but can be disguised as routine infrastructure work. Iran has active mining operations. Tunneling equipment moving around doesn't automatically signal nuclear activity.
Phase 3 is the actual recovery. Debris removal, material extraction, decontamination.
This is the hardest part to hide if it's above ground, because you're moving a lot of material. But if it's underground, you can do it in a controlled environment. Remote-operated vehicles, robotic arms, containment zones with negative pressure to control contamination. The technology exists. It's used in nuclear decommissioning globally. Iran could acquire it, or they could develop it domestically. They've got a sophisticated engineering base.
Phase 4 is re-establishing enrichment capability. Taking the recovered material, the salvaged centrifuges, and getting them spinning again.
Which might not even happen at the same site. If the original facility is compromised, you move the recovered material to a different location, possibly an undeclared one, and set up shop there. The entombment claim becomes irrelevant because the material has been relocated.
The recovery operation doesn't need to restore the original site to functionality. It just needs to extract the material. The enrichment can happen elsewhere.
And that's the strategic flaw in the entombment concept as a safeguard. It assumes the material is neutralized if the site is neutralized, but the material is portable. Uranium hexafluoride is a gas at relatively low temperatures. It's transported in cylinders. If the cylinders survive the strikes, or if the material can be recovered and recontainerized, it can be moved.
Iran's enrichment level was at 60%. That's 142 kilograms of material that's most of the way to weapons grade. You don't need to recover all of it for it to be a proliferation concern. You need to recover enough for a few weapons.
The IEEI's significant quantity. The amount of nuclear material for which the possibility of manufacturing a nuclear explosive device cannot be excluded. For high-enriched uranium is about 25 kilograms. Iran has more than 5 times that amount at 60%. Even if 80% of it is unrecoverable, the remaining 20% is still a bomb's worth of material.
The margin for error on entombment being permanent is basically zero. If Iran recovers even a fraction, the safeguard has failed.
That's assuming the entombment was effective in the first place. We don't have independent verification of what was struck, how thoroughly it was destroyed, or what condition the material is in. The IEEI's access has been limited. Iran has restricted inspectors repeatedly since 2021. We're relying on intelligence assessments that have uncertainty baked in.
This is where the political dimension gets uncomfortable. The entombment claim serves a diplomatic purpose. It allows the administration to declare a win. The strikes achieve their objective. The material is neutralized. We can de-escalate. But if the claim is overstated, it creates a false sense of security that Iran can exploit.
Iran has every incentive to let the world believe the material is unrecoverable. If the international community thinks the file is closed, pressure eases, sanctions might loosen, attention shifts elsewhere. Meanwhile, Iran can work quietly on recovery or on building new capacity at undeclared sites. The asymmetry is stark. One side needs the claim to be true for political reasons. The other side benefits from the claim being believed whether it's true or not.
The entombment claim is the diplomatic equivalent of, we've checked the box. But in nuclear verification, checking the box is the beginning of the process, not the end.
This is where the IIEI's role becomes critical, and also where it's most constrained. The IIEI isn't a police force. It doesn't have its own intelligence capability. It relies on member states for information and on Iran's compliance with inspection agreements. If Iran declares a site entombed and inaccessible, and the IIII can't verify independently, the agency is in a difficult position. It can report what it knows and what it doesn't know, but it can't force access.
The verification gap is baked into the system. The IIII can tell us what it can see, but what it can't see is a large and potentially growing unknown.
Let's be specific about what the IIII reported in March 2026. Iran's stockpile of 60% enriched uranium was 142 kilograms. That's an increase from previous quarters, not a decrease. So whatever was entombed, Iran's overall enrichment capacity is still producing material. The entombment didn't stop the program, it just, maybe, put some portion of it under rubble.
Which circles back to the core question, is entombment a reliable safeguard? The engineering says no. Concrete can be excavated. Debris can be cleared. Material can be recovered. The geology says no. Seismic activity and groundwater can compromise containment. The intelligence picture says no. Underground recovery can evade detection. The history says no. Iran has repeatedly rebuilt after strikes, and the incentives say no. Iran wants the material, and the political declaration that it's entombed gives them cover to recover it.
The only scenario where entombment is reliable is if the material is so thoroughly dispersed and contaminated that recovery is physically impossible. We're talking about a situation where the uranium hexafluoride has been released, reacted with moisture, and formed a contaminated mess that's mixed with concrete dust, rebar fragments, and soil. At that point, it's not a recoverable asset, it's an environmental hazard. But that level of destruction is hard to achieve with conventional airstrikes on hardened facilities. And if you did achieve it, you'd have a different problem, a plume of uranium compounds that could be detected, and that would create a contamination zone.
We haven't seen evidence of that kind of dispersal. No unusual environmental sampling results, no spikes in radiation detected at borders, no satellite imagery showing the kind of devastation that would imply complete dispersal.
What we've seen is strikes that damage facilities, collapse structures, and disrupted operations. That's a very different thing from vaporizing the material.
Let's talk about what listeners should take away from this. The prompt is essentially asking, should we believe the entombment claim? And if not, what's actually happening?
The first takeaway is that entombed is a political term, not a technical one. When you hear it used about nuclear material, the appropriate response is skepticism, not relief. Ask what exactly was entombed, how it was verified, and who is monitoring it going forward. If those questions don't have clear answers, the claim is incomplete.
The second takeaway is that Iran's nuclear program is not a single facility or a single stockpile. It's a distributed capability with redundant sites, underground facilities, and a history of covert construction. Entombing material at one site doesn't neutralize the program. It might not even significantly delay it.
The third takeaway is about verification. Independent verification is the only thing that makes nuclear safeguards meaningful. If the IIEA can't inspect, if intelligence agencies can't fully monitor, if the claims rely on trust, that's not verification. That's hope dressed up as policy.
For listeners who want to track this themselves, the IIEA's quarterly reports on Iran are publicly available. They're technical but readable, and they're the best source for what's actually verified versus what's claimed. Open source intelligence analysts. There are some excellent ones on platforms like Twitter and Substack. Do satellite imagery analysis that fills in some of the gaps. It's worth following a few of those accounts to get a sense of what's visible and what's not.
The OSINT community has been doing remarkable work on Iran's nuclear sites, tracking construction, identifying new tunneling, analyzing imagery for signatures of enrichment activity. It's not a substitute for IIEA inspections, but it's a valuable complement, and it keeps pressure on governments to be honest about what they're claiming.
That's really the broader point here. The entombment claim matters not just because of Iran's nuclear program, but because it sets a precedent. If the international community accepts that a facility can be declared permanently neutralized without independent verification, that becomes the playbook for future conflicts. North Korea is watching. Other potential proliferators are watching. The standard we set now is the standard that gets applied later.
The precedent question is huge. Imagine a future conflict where a nuclear facility is struck, the attacking power declares the material entombed, and the international community moves on. That creates a perverse incentive. If you want to neutralize a nuclear program, just strike it and declare victory. Whether the material is actually neutralized becomes secondary to the political narrative.
The country that was struck has every reason to agree with the narrative publicly, while quietly recovering what it can. It's a win-win for everyone except non-proliferation.
The country avoids further strikes, the attacking power claims success, and the nuclear material slowly makes its way back into circulation. The only loser is the long-term credibility of the non-proliferation regime.
Where does this leave us with Iran specifically? The IIEA reports will continue to track the stockpile numbers. If Iran is recovering entombed material and feeding it back into enrichment cascades, that should show up eventually in the inventory, unless they're doing it entirely at undeclared sites, in which case the IIEA numbers are an undercount.
That's the nightmare scenario. Iran recovers the material, moves it to undeclared facilities, enriches it to 90%, and the international community doesn't know until it's too late. The entombment claim becomes the shield behind which the breakout happens.
Is that likely? I'm not sure it's the most probable scenario, but it's certainly a plausible one, and the entombment claim makes it more plausible, not less.
The most likely scenario, based on Iran's past behavior, is somewhere in the middle. They'll attempt recovery where it's feasible, they'll rebuild damaged cascades, and they'll continue to expand enrichment at sites that weren't struck. The program won't be at full capacity immediately, but it'll trend upward. And the political declaration of entombment will make it harder to sound the alarm when the capacity returns, because the official story is that the problem was solved.
The boy who cried entombed. All right, I want to pull on one more thread before we wrap. The prompt mentions that every world intelligence agency is monitoring the known sites and presumably knows the extent of the damage. I think presumably is doing a lot of work there.
Intelligence agencies know what they can observe. They know what satellites show, what signals they intercept, what human sources report. But they also know what they don't know. Any honest intelligence assessment includes confidence levels and gaps. The public claims the material is entombed, strip out the uncertainty. The classified assessments almost certainly have more caveats.
There's a selection bias in what gets declassified or leaked. The administration wants to highlight success, so the intelligence that supports the entombment narrative gets emphasized. The intelligence that raises doubts stays classified. That's not a conspiracy. It's how governments communicate about sensitive operations, but it means the public picture is systematically rosier than the private one.
We saw this with the 2007 Israeli strike on the Syrian reactor at Al-Kibar. The public story was that the reactor was destroyed and the program was ended. Years later, we learned that Syria had attempted to rebuild elements of the program at other sites. The strike was effective, but it wasn't the end of the story. The same pattern applies here. The strikes on Iran were significant, but declaring the material permanently neutralized goes beyond what the evidence can support.
To answer the prompt directly, there are multiple reasons to be suspicious of the entombment claim. The engineering doesn't support permanence. The geology doesn't support stability. The intelligence picture has known gaps, and the political incentives favor overstatement. The technical complexity of recovery is high, but not insurmountable. Iran has the expertise, the motivation, and the time, and detection is far from certain, especially for underground operations.
The depth of the recovery challenge varies by site. At above-ground facilities like Natanz, the main barrier is debris removal and contamination control, difficult but doable, and hard to hide completely. At underground sites like Fordow, the barrier is accessed through collapsed tunnels. Tunneling is slow, but it's also concealable. In both cases, the material is recoverable with sufficient effort and time.
The sufficient effort and time part is key. Iran has shown it's willing to invest both. They've been pursuing nuclear capability for decades, through sanctions, sabotage, and strikes. A few months or years of debris clearance isn't going to deter them.
The real safeguard isn't entombment. It's sustained pressure, sustained monitoring, and sustained verification. Anything less is a gap that Iran has demonstrated it will exploit.
That's where we'll leave it. The next IEI quarterly report will be worth watching. If the stockpile numbers keep climbing, that tells you something about how effective the entombment really was.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1880s, a Portuguese colonial administrator on São Tomé and Príncipe reported seeing brilliant red auroras over the islands and attributed them to volcanic gases from Mount Cameroon on the African mainland. The claim was accepted for decades until a British geophysicist in 1912 demonstrated that the red coloration was actually caused by high-altitude atomic oxygen emissions, the same mechanism that produces red auroras at altitudes above 150 kilometers during intense geomagnetic storms. The islands sit near the equator, making the sighting one of the lowest latitude aurora observations ever recorded.
A Portuguese bureaucrat saw the sky turn red and blamed a volcano 500 kilometers away.
To be fair, volcanic gases is a pretty reasonable guess when you're near the equator and don't expect auroras. This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop for the Daily Fact. If you want to dig deeper into nuclear verification, we've done episodes on the IIEI's credibility, Israel's targeting of yellow cake production, and the broader shell game of nuclear neutralization. Those are all at My Weird Prompts.
If you've got a question about a claim that doesn't quite add up, send it our way. We'll pull the thread.
Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep, the stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close, from sloth, from man, from long ear. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.